There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
The family is the singular most important institution in society. It existed before government.
This is something that happens to me all the time. I am a housewife. That is my job. And people always want to know, oh, that's nice, and what else do you do?
Joel's church, as magnificent as the Houston Convex Center is, would pale in comparison to the temple that Solomon built. Joel only has one wife. I think Solomon had around 1,000. So Solomon out-Osteen's Osteen, by far.
It was cross before glory for him. And as that was true for him, it's going to be true for us.
Former evangelicals on track to be Lutheran pastors by attending Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Love, issues, etc.
It was true. It has been true for, well, almost a decade. We could say, I don't know if it meant much, but we could say at least that if the American public were polled, more of them, slightly more of them, identified themselves as pro-life than pro-choice. And that was a good thing to say. It kind of gave us hope. Well, the American public are still, at least by a slim majority, pro-life. But that has changed. A recent Gallup poll shows an increase in the number of people who identify themselves as pro-choice. The reasons for that are perhaps something worth exploring here in the first part of the program today. But no longer can we say, at least for now, that the majority of Americans call themselves pro-life. They call themselves pro-choice, for whatever reason that may be. We're going to be talking about that new Gallup poll and waiting periods for abortion and the rising cost of abortion with Carol Tobias, president of National Right to Life, here in the first few minutes of Issues, Etc. Greetings and welcome. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. A little bit later, Terry Mattingly of the Weekly On Religion column will join us. We're going to talk about greeting Sunday morning worship visitors. Do they want to be greeted, singled out, left alone? Is there a way to deal with that? This is actually a huge question on Sunday morning for churches of all stripes. We'll deal with it with Terry Mattingly a little bit later. Holly Shear will join us, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Seven Takeaways from the Duggar Family Sex Abuse Tragedy. We'll deal with that subject with her. Chris Roseborough, Fighting for the Faith, joins us in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., our regular series with him. This week in Pop American Christianity Today, he's brought us some examples of what's called baptism in the Holy Spirit. Not just regular baptism, but a special kind of baptism. This week in Pop American Christianity with Chris Roseborough. And it's Friday, so we're going to play Issues, Etc. soundbite of the week in the last half hour of the program. We'll play 4 soundbites from this week's Issues, Etc. audio. You listen, and then you give us a call, you send us an email, a tweet, or go to our Facebook fan page, and you vote for Issues, Etc. soundbite of the week on this Friday afternoon, May the 29th. Joining us to talk about a new Gallup poll showing an increase of Americans who are pro-choice and waiting periods in the rising cost of abortion, Carol Tobias, president of National Right to Life. Carol, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you, Todd. It's great to be back.
Should we be discouraged that the latest Gallup poll shows that for the first time in 7 years, Americans who are pro-choice hold a statistically significant lead over Americans who identify themselves as pro-life?
I don't think so. The labels pro-choice and pro-life have bounced back and forth over the years, and it kind of depends on what is happening in the news at the time or maybe local stories. Someone who may not consider themselves pro-choice one time, will at another time. So just the labels themselves, I don't think, are a good indicator of where the country is.
What do you think is the best indicator of where the country is with regard to, because people might argue, look, we've got, since 1973, legalized abortion on demand through all 9 months of gestation, and it's still here, and there doesn't appear to be any near prospect of it going away. What do you think the best indicator of where the American people actually stand, perhaps the devil's in the details, on the issue of abortion?
Well, this battle is going to go on for many more years, unfortunately, and many more unborn children are going to lose their lives. But if you look at the details in the Gallup poll, they have 42% of the people saying that abortion should be legal under any circumstances or legal in most circumstances. But they've got 55% who say abortion should be legal in only a few circumstances or illegal in all circumstances. So that's 55% who do not approve of the way abortion is being practiced in this country. And actually, of the 50% who say that they're pro-choice, 23% of them said that abortion should be legal in only a few circumstances. Well, that was the majority of the people who said that they were pro-life. I'm one who, I don't like abortion, but if the mother's life is truly endangered by carrying that pregnancy to term, abortion is an option that can be considered. So then I'm sitting there, okay, do I say illegal in all circumstances or legal in only a few circumstances? So I think the fact that 23% of the people who said they were pro-choice selected probably the same position I would take really is a much better indicator of where the people are in this country.
So actually, the devil is in the details. And as you said at the very beginning, Carol, the labels really, if left completely undefined like that, applied after the data has been gathered, those labels are misleading in some cases.
Oh, they're very misleading. You know, most people like the idea of choice. So, yeah, I'm pro-choice. But if you start asking them, when should abortion be legal? Should it be legal in the last 3 months of pregnancy? Should it be illegal because the woman is in college and wants to finish school before she, starts a family? If you start getting into specifics and that, well, no, I don't agree with that. No, I don't agree with that. And pretty soon you thought, you know what, you're actually pro-life. If you could have that kind of conversation with everybody in the country one-on-one, I think you'd find a much bigger majority of people who would decide, oh, you know, I really am pro-life.
What about, talk, if you would, about that kind of hardcore of truly pro-choice, or we probably say, given the rhetoric, pro-abortion. Those who say, as we've had recently from the DNC chair, without qualification, abortion on demand, without apology, all 9 months, nothing should stand in the way of that woman's decision, not time, not the length of the gestation, not any law. Talk about that hardcore of the truly pro-abortion.
Well, they're the tough ones. In this poll, it said 29% of U.S. adults would take that position, that abortion should be legal under any circumstance. And that's almost a third of the population that we have to deal with. They're very vocal. Sometimes they can be very, very mean, very aggressive. But we have to, deal with that. But I would rather focus on those who are discomfited by the whole abortion project. I mean, that they think abortion should be allowed in some cases, but they're not comfortable with the way it's really being practiced. I think that is our best audience for trying to convince them that if they think abortion is wrong in some cases, then it's probably wrong in all cases.
Now, does it tell you anything that the actual raw number of abortions, still too high, one is still too many, of course, yeah, but the actual number of abortions per year has been going down?
It really has. It just a little over a million last year. We were at an all-time high in the early 1990s of 1.6 million. So the numbers now being now about a million, it's a big decrease. Women are choosing life. They're just deciding, for whatever reason, that they're not going to kill their baby. Might be family speaking up saying, we'll help you. Might be coworkers saying, you really don't want to do that. I think the fact that so many women who have had abortions are now speaking out saying, don't make that same mistake that I did, that's all having an impact. And women are just choosing life for their children in higher numbers, which is very encouraging.
And it does appear, at least according to some research, that young women are more pro-life than they have been in the past.
Yes, they are. This Gallup poll showed that the older people in the country are supposedly becoming a little more pro-choice using their label. But I think that's the baby boomers that are getting older and are now, you know, being put in with the senior citizen category. So that is affecting the change because the baby boomers were the strongest pro-abortion group. But we do see the younger people, the younger women, choosing life. And quite frankly, part of it is because in this country it's no longer problematic to be a single mother, that a lot of them have just decided they can handle it.
Now, that leads us kind of to the second subject I wanted to discuss with you, and as a way of kind of bridging the two. Has what I call incremental legislation, and it generally tends to pass pretty well, depending on the state, restricting abortion in various ways, or regulating abortion as any kind of medical clinic, a truly medical clinic would be, a surgical procedure would be, have these incremental approaches also made a difference, if not in public opinion? Well, they certainly educate. Law always educated, but perhaps also in that raw number of abortions.
I think that it does make a difference. You know, we can't stop abortion completely, but we can say through legislation that before a woman gets an abortion, she has to be given specific information. She has to be told about the development of her unborn child, the possible complications that could arise from the abortion, and from pregnancy and delivery. I mean, this is, you know, give her all the facts that she needs to make a decision, complications that could arise, alternatives that are available, and then give her some time to think about it. Some of the states are saying that part of that consent, informed consent process, she has to be shown an ultrasound of her unborn child. And all of this really does kind of make them stop and think. So, you know, getting parents involved in their minor daughter's decision. You know, we can't stop abortion, but we can set up some things that make people think about what they're doing. And I really believe it's having an impact.
A recent piece by Olga Kazan in The Atlantic is covering the waiting periods across the United States that have been imposed on abortion. Sometimes it's 24 hours, sometimes it's 72 hours. The length varies. But the piece focuses on how this has made abortion more expensive and therefore kind of hitting the abortion economy in a hard way. What are your thoughts there?
I'm all for hitting the abortion economy in a hard way. You know, if this is making abortion more expensive for the woman, you know, this is supposed to be a sob story. We're supposed to be feeling sorry for that in those cases. But I thought it was interesting that she pointed out that abortions are paid for in cash because the abortion providers don't want the woman walking out their door after, you know, using a credit card thinking, oh no, what did I do? Why did I do that? And she calls her credit card company and says, cancel that charge. Well, they're not going to take that chance. That's why they want cash up front. They don't want her to regret the abortion and then, you know, cancel any payment that she might have made. And I think that kind of gives a basis of support for the legislation that says after she gets the information or considers, you know, is considering the abortion, she has to wait 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours before, she, you know, give her that option to change her mind. They know she's going to change her mind. That's why they want cash up front so she can't get it back. She can't stop payment. I think the article actually buttresses our arguments that women do need time to think about what they're doing.
Now, the picture that is painted, if not in the Atlantic piece, it's usually painted in the rhetoric of the pro-abortion crowd, is that a woman discovers she's pregnant with an unwanted pregnancy. She's sitting in her kitchen, drinking a cup of coffee, carefully considering this. Then she makes a casual visit to the doctor, and they talk about it very somberly. And then she comes to this rational decision. She goes to the abortion clinic. And that's what they're trying to say. Woman's already made up her mind. She's already consulted her doctor. She's already talked to everybody involved. Why do you want to make her wait any longer and make it more expensive? Is that how the decision is often made?
No. No. A woman is like, oh, no, I'm pregnant. What am I going to do? I don't want this baby. And they're going to go to the internet and look up, you know, unplanned pregnancy, and unfortunately abortion ads are going to pop up. Now, fortunately, there are a lot of crisis pregnancy centers, pregnancy resource centers that are out there that are also on the internet that will give her the kind of support and help and advice and counseling and medical help that she needs. But this is not, I mean, the abortion providers want to say, we are just offering another medical service. I do not know of any surgical procedure other than, you know, maybe a burst appendix, where you go to the doctor and they say, we're taking you to the operating room right now. You know, I've had several surgeries. You meet with the doctor and they'll do tests and they will come back and they'll do some counseling. And then they schedule the surgery and it might be 3 weeks later, and depending on the importance, it might be 6 weeks later, or, you know, in today's current medical climate, sometimes it's 3 and 4 months later. You know, the abortion service is not a medical procedure. It's a surgical procedure. But they want to rush the woman in, get her in there, make that abortion decision, you know, get it all taken care of before she has a chance to change her mind. You know, they want us to think of it as a medical procedure, and yet they treat it differently themselves.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, Carol, as you rightly point out, you can in some places, depending on the size of the clinic, say in Chicago, you've got a gigantic one in Chicago, these mega abortion centers. A woman can walk in, and within the course of 2 hours, have an abortion very easily, very quickly, no appointment required. She can do that if there's no waiting period imposed there. I don't know of any other surgery that you could walk in and 2 hours later, it's done.
There isn't. That's why they don't like the waiting periods, because they really don't want her to think about the procedure. If you talk to women or people who have run abortion facilities, worked in abortion facilities, they know that their job, once a woman walks in the door or even just makes a phone call, their job is to get her into that facility as fast as you can, you know, answer every question that she's got in a way that makes her think that the only thing that she can do, the best thing she can do for her life, is to get rid of that child, only, you know, that fetus, that embryo, you know, whatever they want to call it. But their job is to get her through that door and get that abortion done before she can change her mind. That's why, you know, the story about how expensive it's going to be if you make her wait 72 hours to think about it, that's lost revenue for them, because she might just change her mind. She might meet someone that says, hey, I'll help you with that. You know, they're looking at the bottom line. This is all about money.
Carol Tobias is president of National Right to Life. You will find a link to National Right to Life at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Carol, thank you again. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much, Todd.
When we come back on this Friday afternoon, May the 29th, we're going to talk with Terry Mattingly of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and GetReligion.org about greeting Sunday morning worship visitors. It's a rather complicated and pervasive problem. Stay tuned.
There is confusion about marriage in the world, but not with Jesus and his scriptures. Gottesdienst, the Journal of Lutheran Liturgy, will be having a conference on Tuesday, June 30th at St. Paul Lutheran Church, Hamel, Illinois, on marriages and weddings. Come and hear the theology of marriage and the theology of the wedding, and be strengthened in confessing. Helpful sectionals for pastors and laity in the finest of the church's worship. For more information, go to gottesdienstonline.blogspot.com.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. St. John Lutheran, Springfield, Pennsylvania. Zion Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. St. Paul's Lutheran, Long Beach, California. All Saints Lutheran, Charlotte, North Carolina. Redeemer Lutheran, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Shepherd of the Lake Lutheran, Garrison, Minnesota, Emmanuel Lutheran, Kansas City, Missouri, and Holy Cross Lutheran, St. Genevieve, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues, Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio at our website and in the Issues Etc. Journal, issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.